Good morning and good Chodesh, and welcome to Yirches Amud Aleph, Amud Beis, even a couple of words onto Yirches Amud Aleph. What I'd like to do is to go through the last piece of Gemara in the set of proofs that the Gemara brings regarding the person who wants to be Somech, the person who wants to put some kind of encroaching item, or potentially encroaching item, at the end of his property, right? We had talked about the machlokas Abaye and Rava. If I want to dig a cistern, am I allowed to put the cistern right at the border of my property, where it could potentially impinge on use of the property next door, if the person wants to dig a bore, doesn't want to dig a bore? We had a machlokas Abaye and Rava, where Abaye says, yes, you can go right up to the border. Rava says, no, you are not allowed to go right up to the border. If I remember correctly. And the last case that the Gemara discusses when it tries to decide who's right is the case of bees and mustard. And the idea that potentially the bees are bad for the mustard is bad in some way for the bees. We'll talk about how that might work. We'll talk about how mustard harms bees. It's a lot of fun. And explain the apparent position of the Rabbanan that mustard harms bees, but bees don't harm mustard. How to understand the idea that maybe the harm is bilateral, and then move on from that to ask a broader question, which touches on things we discussed in the first shiur, the question of why this is here in Bava Basra instead of in Bava Kama, where it really seems to belong. We have lots of material on my animal going into someone else's yard and eating things. Why is that different from the bees eating the mustard? We have lots of material on Bor Birshas Hayachid. I have a cistern, something that is dangerous, but it's in my property and somebody else goes in and gets hurt. If the bees are coming into my property and eating my mustard, why is that my problem? So that's something that we'll discuss as well. And then finally, as part of this discussion, we get to a principle which we've already discussed before, and it's going to continue to come up in the perek, and that is that Rabbi Yossi says, Al nizak laharchik, that if there's somebody whose property is causing harm to somebody else, the somebody else is the one who's going to have to worry about it. He has to distance himself, with the exception of Giri Delay. What we're going to do is see another potential exception to it, which is where the harm involved does damage to Iker Yishuv or Takanas HaOlam, and we'll talk about that and what that means in the course of the shiur. I'm not 100% sure we'll get everything done in an hour. I kind of hope we will. But I got about 3 hours of sleep last night, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure because I may just need to say things multiple times in order to get them coherent. So we'll see. But I wish you luck. We start out with the Gemara itself. Okay, so if you take a look on the sheet, source Aleph, Bava Basra Yirches Amud Aleph. Ta Shema, as we're trying to figure out this, who's right about putting your encroaching item at the border between the properties. We distance a soaking area from green. Soaking area we talked about last year when we were doing Shvias and how they would soak different materials, especially flax, for purposes we already talked about last year. But it's something that has a terrible aroma, and also the liquid gets absorbed in the ground, and in a way that's apparently going to be damaging for the greens that are next door. So so we're told that you have to distance your soaking area from the greens that are growing there next door. V'sakreishim min habitzalin. You also have to distance your leek from the onions that are growing right next door. V'sachardal min advarim. And you also have to distance your mustard from the bees next door. And this is a straight Mishnah, what we're talking about. It's a Mishnah that appears in Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, Taima dika yerek. The reason why you have to distance your mishra, your soaking area, is because there are greens already there. Right? Halaki yerek samich. That implies that if there are no greens there, then I would be allowed to put my soaking area there, even though it's going to impinge on the neighbor's ability to put in greens afterwards. So the Gemara says, well, not necessarily. Halaki yerek nami lo samich. Even if there are no greens there, you're also not allowed to put your mishra there. The point is just to teach me these are bad for each other. Why the Gemara needs to do that here, I'm not so sure. I didn't really go into it to investigate, but I thought that was kind of odd. That, I mean, not unprecedented. We also learned about the width of cistern walls, you know, in our Mishnayos. But nonetheless, it does seem a little strange. Nonetheless, the main part of our discussion. Ihachi, Ema Seifa, look at the end of that Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Matir Bechardal. Rabbi Yossi says, not so fast on the mustard case. He says, on the mustard one, you're allowed to put the mustard there. Don't worry about his bees. Why? Because you're telling me, move the mustard, it's harming my bees. I'll tell you, move your bees, they're harming my mustard, they're eating ligluge chardaloi. We're going to talk about what ligluge chardaloi is. Or are, we'll just call them mustard seed right now. But the point is, the damage is by end of quote. That's Rabbi Yossi's statement. And the point in our Gemara, in quoting Rabbi Yossi, is to say, V'id lo samich, hechi mishkachas la. I don't understand. How did that happen? Right? If you're telling me you're not allowed to go up to the border, how did you end up with mustard beside bees? So obviously, the very fact that you're having this conversation about mustard and bees tells me, again, you're allowed to go up to the border. Clear on the question? Yes, Daniel. So that's actually Machlokas Rashi Tosfos, as to whether it's only Rabbi Yossi. Rashi, I think, seems to think it's only Rabbi Yossi. Tosfos, I think, has the Rabbanon as well. That was one of the pieces I was going to actually discuss in Shir, and then decided a little too much Ion there. But definitely worth seeing. So the Gemara is going to give us four different answers to explain this. First answer, Amar Rav Papa, Bilokeach. Rav Papa says, what we're talking about is where one person owned both properties at first, and planted mustard in part of it, and then sold off the other part to somebody else who wants to put in bees. That's what we're talking about. That's how you end up with this. So no one was someich to somebody else's property. It's a lokeach. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, I don't understand. If you're talking about where somebody bought that other part of the property, then my time at the Rabbanan, that I don't understand. Well, why would the Rabbanan prohibit having the mustard there? When I put in the mustard, it was my property. I owned everything. It wasn't near a border at all. What's your issue? The Ode, my time at Rabbi Yossi, Afilu Mishra V'Yarkanami. Further, why did Rabbi Yossi disagree with them specifically regarding Chardal, regarding the mustard? He should disagree on all the cases. Right? Are you telling me only the Chardal was the case of the Lokeach and the Mishra V'Yarek and the creation in Betzalem? Those were different? Like, why the same logic should pertain for all three cases? Clear? We're good? Amar Ravina. So Ravina says, I'll give you a second answer. Kasavi Rabbanan ala mazik laharchik es atzmo. The answer is, the Rabbanan believe that the mazik has to distance himself, even though when he put his stuff there in the first place, it was birshus. So I owned this whole field. I planted half with mustard, right? Then I sold off the other half. Now I have an achrayus to move my mustard away. Because I'm the mazik to your bees. So that's why the Rabbanan say what they do. That's why the Rabbanan require me to move it. So the Gemara says, not so fast. You're saying the Rabbanan believe the Mazik has to move. Well, the Rabbi Yossi, who disagreed with them, must believe the Nizak has to move. Right? It's his problem. Again, so why did you only say that on the bee and mustard case? You should have said that on all three cases. Right? Straightforward as a response. So the Gemara gives me a third approach. I'll tell you what. Rabbi Yossi is in with the Rabbanan. The mazik has to move. The victim never has to move. This is what Rabbi Yossi said to the Rabbanan. Tenach mishra v'yarka dahani mazki hani v'hani lo mazki hani. Those cases that we dealt with, the mishra case, the soaking case, the case of the onions and leek, he says, those cases are one direction. This is causing the harm, and this one is the one that's being harmed. That's all that's happening in this case. However, in the mustard case, right, in the case of the mustard and the bees, they are each harming each other. The harm is bilateral. That's why Rabbi Yossi distinguishes between this case and the other case. Rabbi Yossi says the bees and the mustard harm each other, so I can go up to the boundary and you can go up to the boundary. That's the way it goes. Whereas the Chachamim are saying, not so fast. The Rabbanan, then what's the Rabbanan's argument? They say, Devorim lachargo lamazgile. They say, no, the bees don't harm the mustard. I'm just going to explain it literally straightforwardly, or as straightforwardly as possible right now. If you're talking about mustard seed, the bees can't find the mustard seed. Blind bees. I don't know. It's not working for the bees. Their dance or whatever it is to help them detect food is not helping them find the mustard seed. And as far as the leaves, the bees can eat the leaves. Don't worry about it. The leaves will regrow. That's not a problem. To which the Gemara says, "V'savah Rabbi Yosi al hamazik laharchik esatzma." Wait, you really think Rabbi Yosi believes that the vandal, the one who's causing the harm, is the one who has to move? Don't you know the other Mishnah in Daf Chavei? Well, there are other Mishnahs in Daf Chavei, but Chavei Amud Beis V'atanan. Mishnah says regarding a case in which your tree has roots that are going into my sister and my boar, Vatanan, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Aval Pisha, Boar, Kodemes, Le'ilan, Lo Yakot. Rabbi Yossi says, even if the cistern was there first, you don't cut back my tree. Shezech over besoch shalo, v'zeno teh besoch shalo. I planted the tree on my property. It's not my issue. Well, I don't know. You believe Mazik, L'archik, Esatzmo, then it is your issue. So how do we understand Rabbi Yossi? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. Right? We're dealing with a fundamental problem, which is, the more you push Rabbi Yossi into Al-Hanizak Laharchik Es Atzmo, the more he should say it for all three cases and not just the mustard and the bees. That's our fundamental issue. El Eliolam Rabbi Yossi Al-Hanizak Sfirole. The answer is that Rabbi Yossi believes that it's for the Nizak who has to distance himself. Ulidivrayim Derabbanan Ka'amar Lahu. He is only presenting his view within the Rabbanan. He's saying, according to me, this applies in all three cases. As far as I am concerned, you distance in all three. The mustard, the leek, the mishra, fine. But as far as you're concerned, as far as I am concerned, it's always about the victim moving. But according to you, you say the mazik is the one who has to distance. That may be true if you're dealing with the soaking flax. That may be true if you're dealing with the onions and leek, where one harms the other. It is not bilateral; it's unilateral. There's a mazik and there's a nizak. That's fine. The elachardelu dvarim travayu maskiyah dadi. But if you're dealing with mustard and bees, then each one harms the other. So he says, I don't believe this. But you should believe this. You know, I believe, Rabbi Yossi says, we're in the last part of Source Aleph. Rabbi Yossi says, from my perspective, nah, no one ever needs to move. But from your perspective, in the Chargal case at least, where it's bilateral, to which the Rabbanan say back, no. Because, again, as they said before, we don't actually believe that it is bilateral, because the bees aren't really harming the honey. The honey is only harming the bees aren't harming the mustard. The mustard is harming the bees, which, again, we still need to define. Yes, Idan.
This reading gets along with the Mishnah of the Sefer, not so much as the Mishnah.
Meaning?
The Mishnah is not explaining why he's mothering, specifically mother of the
Chava. Right.
So how does that get along with
the So the answer, no, because the way that they're reading the Mishnah is, all of this is Rabbi Yossi saying, this is your shita, within your view. I don't believe any of this, Rabbi Yossi is saying. That's the way the Gemara is rereading it. Rabbi Yossi, when he's speaking here, when he's addressing the case, Rabbi Yossi matir bachardol, what he really means is, you're matir bachardol. I am matir on everything. That's the way they're reading it. But he is. No, he is. What do you mean? Right. No, but it's what we're bringing. It's what we're bringing here. Right, no, that's true. It's definitely a cleaner read with that line included.
Yeah.
Right, no, I think you're right. I think that's true. Okay. So that's a straight read of the, you know, of the Gemara. And I also note for you, in source Beis, where you actually have it brought in the Gemara and Daf Chayim of Beis intact, which is, as Idan points out, the Tosefta read. Tana Rabbi Yosi Mati Bechardol, Shiach Alomar Lo, Ad Shtomer Li Archei Chardolcha Min Dvorai, Harchei Dvorcha Min Chardoloi, Shabbos V'Ochlos Legluge Chardoloi. It's the same thing that we just read, but now it's intact as one piece, that the damage is bilateral. So first of all, like I said in the beginning, let's understand what's going on with the bees and the mustard. What is this about? How does mustard harm bees? How do bees harm mustard? So in terms of bees harming the mustard, Rabbi Yossi speaks about eating legluge chardoloi, the legugim of my chardal. So if you look at source Gimel on the sheet, Rashi says, pirche chardoloi, the flowers. The bees are eating the flowers of the mustard. The Aruch gives a different explanation, which you see in Tosfos in source Dalet. Legluge chardal, pirish akuntras prachim, uba Aruch pirish garin. The Aruch says, no, legugim, of course, are seeds. He says that's the approach of the Aruch. But Tosfo says, I don't understand what you're talking about. That doesn't fit the Gemara in the least, right? You saw this Tosfo presumably in Hachana. That doesn't make any sense. Tosfo says if you go back to the Gemara itself, when Rabbi Yossi said that the harm was bilateral, right? Go back to answer number 3 in source Aleph. The Rabbanan's answer was, no, bees don't harm chardal. If you're talking about seeds, they can't find the seeds. Or it's not common, they're not, but usually it's taken as they can't find. If you're talking about leaves, the leaves only grow. If Rabbi Yossi really told them that he's eating the seeds, then why did you throw in the leaves at all? The Chachamim clearly don't know whether it's seeds or leaves. The Chachamim have no idea if it's seeds or leaves. So therefore, in Tosfos, the Ri says that's not what happened, like I bolded for you in Source Dalet. Mashma delo pirish Rabbi Yossi bidvarav. Rabbi Yossi never explained it. He says the answer simply is that Rabbi Yossi did not clarify what he meant at all. That seems to be. So now I have a problem. I don't understand how mustard harms bees. Rabbi Yossi never said, apparently, just how bees harm mustard, according to Tosfos. And also, I don't really understand the whole back and forth, this bilateral thing. So first of all, in terms of how bees harm mustard, Tosfos takes the position at the end of Source Dalet that they eat small parts. He says at the end, V'yesh lomar shafrochem einon ki ma'at, u'b'yom ha'yamayim shi'amdu en yechol mahazik. It's just a little bit that they're eating, and it's not going to cause a lot of harm. That's Tosfos. And then what does hadar pari actually mean? So Tosfos says that eating the small parts doesn't kill the plant. Ramban offers another idea, which I didn't bring you on the sheet. Ramban says they eat the leaves regrow, and the bees don't want any more leaves. Meaning the bees eat the leaves the first time. They don't like it, because there's mustard oil in the leaves. So the leaves regrow, and then the bees don't come back for more. That's Ramban. The Rima Gash says it's not leaves, it's seeds, and the seeds are in the ground, and therefore you don't see them. But I actually like the explanation of Rabbi Elazar Reichman of Nof Ayalon, brought in source Hay, because there's a fundamental problem here. You could argue Nishtana Hateva, that the world has changed, but in our world, bees don't eat leaves, and bees don't eat seeds. What do bees take from plants? Right, so they take tsuf, which is nectar, and they take pollen. Right? Nectar and pollen is what bees take. They're not eating seeds, and they're not eating leaves. If you see something eating a leaf, it may be an aphid, I don't know, it's not a bee. Eliezer Reichman, I should say, of Nof Ayalon, offers a suggestion, which I brought you here on the sheet in source Hay. I'm not going to read it out, but you can see it there. He suggests that the bees also take early growths that will become flowers. And he has nice pictures on the website for it. They use it to make what's called propolis, which I may be mispronouncing. But it sounds like it should be propolis, probably. And propolis is, as he explains there, this kind of a glue, which is a separate product that people take. They use it as against infection and the like. And that's what they're taking. That's what the bees are taking that we're concerned about, because if it's left on the plant, it will grow into flowers, but the bees are eating it at a stage when it's not yet mature. So that's his suggestion. Yes. That's interesting. So the suggestion here from Rav Steven is that maybe wasps are what we're talking about, and wasps would eat it. So, you know, in Tanakh, wasps and bees have different names, right? We call wasps tzirah, and bees, of course, devorah. You'd have to go through the Gemara and see whether that distinction holds, or whether they start calling, you know, like, for me here, when I arrived in Toronto, I called everything bees, because I had grown up with bees and yellow jackets and wasps. Here, they call wasps what I grew up calling bees or yellow jackets. So there are different terms in different places in different times. So maybe, yeah, it's an interesting possibility that it could be a wasp. I don't know. We'd have to look and see how the terms are used. Yes, Jeffrey.
Can I ask a basic question, which is, and I'll say it in two ways. Why are we learning this? And two ways to ask it. How often do beekeepers and mustard growers next to each other that this is what the Gemara picked?
Yeah.
And also, why don't we pick sheep farmers and peas and carrot farmers? Why are we doing this?
Right. So I think in the beginning, which was before you joined, I actually gave a little bit of an introduction that explains it. But to answer in brief, first of all, bees and mustard were together a lot, as you're about to find out. That's number one. That was actually a very common thing. But also because it's a case of bilateral harm, or allegedly bilateral harm, you know, according to Rabbi Yossi, where the harm goes both ways. I don't know how it would hurt the sheep if they ate somebody else's carrots. You know, you'd have to come up with such a case. But bees and mustard were actually very common, and that's where we're going next. Because we have to discuss, how does mustard harm the bees? How does mustard harm, perhaps, the honey? So Rashi gives a very interesting answer, which, did I bring it in Source Above? No, I did not. But Rashi's answer is that the bees eat the mustard parts, and the sharpness of the mustard parts burns their mouth, and they consume their honey to make up for that sharpness. That's Rashi. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos says that no, it's about affecting the quality of the honey, giving the honey a sharp taste. That's the Rambam's explanation. However, I can't find support for either of those, and in fact, apiarists, which are people who grow bees, actually claim that mustard is a really good plant to grow near your bees, because the mustard will help the bees to get pollen. Apparently the pollen is very, very good for bees, and bees like the plant. So that doesn't support Rashi's read, and it doesn't support Rambam's read. However, to the rescue again, Rabbi Eliezer Reichman of Nofai Alone, who I brought you on the sheet, he suggests that mustard honey, meaning honey grown from pollen taken from mustard plants, actually hardens before it can be jarred. He says it as a maybe, but I then looked for this and found it everywhere. People who raise bees talk about this problem. Take a look, I give you one example in Source Vav from the well-named beeinformed.org. Jeffrey, that title is for you. As far as a resource for honeybees, mustard is always a very welcomed sight to beekeepers and can provide significant resources to colonies when soil moisture is adequate. The nectar is attractive and easily accessible to honeybees. The resulting honey is typically light to yellow in color and can be prone to rapid crystallization, like canola and other related plants. ... That's your problem. Your problem is crystallization. Crystallization occurs when the sucrose that's in the honey, forms into crystals, and then it rapidly does that throughout the honey, and then you have to warm the honey in the event that you want the honey to become liquid again. And that is what we're talking about, I believe. That's why it's bad for the honey that they produce. I also found a paper in Sor Zion, which has other stuff about honeybees and mustard. But the writers there of that paper, their native tongue is not English, and I had a very hard time trying to understand what they were saying. I gave you the link for anyone who really wants to research this more. But overall, now you now have a picture in the Gemara of Rabbi Yossi saying the bees are bad for the mustard. Perhaps they're eating the early flour that's used to make propolis. The mustard is bad for the bees because it creates honey that will crystallize. So why don't the Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Yossi? Why are the Rabbanan on a different page from Rabbi Yossi? So I assumed when I first read it that it's a Metzias question. It's a question about reality. What is it that's happening here? However, if Michal Bernicka was the son-in-law of the Kuntres Shiurim, Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gustman, and in a footnote on the Kuntres Shiurim, it's Bava Basra Tess, footnote 23, he suggests that's not what's going on here, and I brought it for you on the sheet in source Ches. He says, look where I bolded within it. He says they're not debating whether the bees are bad for the mustard, or in the Yerushalmi that we'll get to, whether the world needs trees or the world needs pits. Ella de kule alma savri de devarim mazgi lechardol pachos mimasha chardol mazik ledevarim. Everybody agrees the bees are less bad for the mustard than the mustard is bad for the bees. And everybody agrees in that Yerushalmi that we'll see that the world needs cisterns for water more than it needs trees. I'm not sure if everyone at the climate summit this week agreed, disagreed, but that's what he says. V'savi rabbanon dekevan de'echad mazik tfei ein anu mischashvim b'zeshe mazik pachos. The view of the rabbanon is that you only care about the one that's causing more harm. You don't care about the one that's causing less harm. Rabbi Yossi suffered the mikom makom shnei mazik, and Rabbi Yossi says no. If you are mazik, you are mazik. It doesn't matter if the other, it's like two children in the playground, right? I don't care that he hit you first. You're not supposed to hit other people. That's the way it works. So why would Rabbi Yossi take one position and the Rabbanan take the other? Why would the Rabbanan say I only care who is hitting harder, and Rabbi Yossi says I care about both who are hitting? So he continues to explain. Ubeir advarim. From the perspective of the person who is getting harmed, the fact that he causes less harm and has less of a loss, that's the way of the world. You make a math calculation. When you're dealing with nezikin, in other words, if you're dealing with nezek, if you're dealing with financial calculations, so you say, you harmed him more than he harmed you, the net result is that you caused harm and the other guy didn't harm you, right? You caused him $1,000 of harm. He caused you $700 of harm. So at the end of the day, you caused him $300 of harm. You are the mazik, he's the nizak. It's a financial calculation. He says, "Wamela zesha mazik pachos eno nikra mazik." So the guy who hit less is not called a mazik at all. However, Abu Rabbi Yossi Savar de Mazik Shaimin, and Rabbi Yossi says, I care about how the Mazik's perspective looks at it. Why? The Dine Harchakos Nizakim Novim Meha Isser Lehazik. And this is a big topic in the Kuntres Shiurim for those who looked at it. He says, because the law of distancing yourself from the other guy is not a law of making up for the financial harm you caused somebody. You are not allowed to harm people. It's an isser to harm people. That's the issue. Ulagabe isser lahazik ein afkamina kamahu mazik. As far as don't harm people, it doesn't matter whether the other guy hits you more. You follow? He says the position that Rabbi Yossi has, and this is very well supported in the Yerushalmi, but we haven't read the Yerushalmi yet, so we can't go through this last part here without the Bor and the Elon yet. But what he's saying is, if you look at this as a pay for the damage you do to other people calculation, then you're right. It's only whoever harms more. But if you look at it as, am I allowed to be mazik? Am I not allowed to be mazik? any nezek is no good, and therefore this is considered bilateral. That's his perspective. Yes, Michael. Yes, it does. Correct. Yep, that is exactly right. The what Michael said, for the benefit of those online, is that this sounds a lot like the discussion that we had back in the beginning in my Shir Kleli in Elul, that how do we understand all of these laws of distancing? Is it part of the laws of Nezikin, or is it part of a separate Isser for you, Drachei Adarchei Noam, or Hashavas Aveda, or all the different explanations that we gave back then, Vechei Achicha Imach, or whatever, that it's a separate standalone Isser? And the answer is yes. I had not seen the Kuntres HaShiurim back when I gave that shiur, or I would have invoked it. He has a long discussion in the beginning of Bava Basra Tess where he, in his own way, goes through this issue. But yes, that's what this is part of. Okay, so now we understand Mitzius. We understand a little bit about the Gemara, and we also have this nice Ha'ara on bilateral harm. But now I come back to the question I asked in the beginning. Why is the mustard case here in Bava Basra instead of in Bava Kama? Right? When the bees eat the mustard, why isn't that Shane? Right? Your animal went in somebody else's property and ate his stuff. When the mustard harms the bees, isn't that Bor B'Rishus HaYachid? Right? I have a boar in my property. Your animal came in and fell into my boar. It's not my problem. I didn't do anything. In fact, the Shita Mekubetzes quotes the Rashba asking that question in Source Tess. The Rashba asks this question. I'm not going to read it inside because I see it's already 11:02. But he asks that question. He has his own idea. He suggests that maybe he has the boar question. He says maybe the answer is that the mustard is harming the bees from far away via the aroma of the mustard. It's the smell of the mustard, following the view that the problem, as Rashi said, is that the bees have this taste of mustard in their mouth and then they eat their own honey. So maybe the smell of the mustard is what does it. And therefore it's happening even from far away, and you can call it giri delay. That's his suggestion, but he rejects that. Because if that were true, then Rabbi Yossi would have to say, you have to distance the mustard. Because Rabbi Yossi believes in giri delay. So that, he throws out that idea. So regarding the Shane question, your bees are eating my mustard, why isn't that just Shane? The Ramban in the Melchamos offers a suggestion, which I brought you in Source Yud. We have a principle regarding wild creatures that live in homes that we set up for them, like doves that live in a dove cut that I set up at the top of a pole, or bees that are in the hive that's out there, that on a Raisa level, I don't own the doves that come to my dove cut. I don't own, says Ramban, the bees that come to my beehive. They're not really mine. On a Darabanan level, we say they're mine, such that we don't let people take them. Because if you do that, it's going to start fights. Tikkun Olam, we say, don't let people take them. How? Achake Shalom. But that's Ramban's answer, is the guy doesn't really own the bees. And since he doesn't own the bees, he's not liable. As the Nesivos notes, though, that's dachuk. That's a very difficult answer. Because if you say that he doesn't really own them, then everything we've said is out the window. He doesn't really own the bees. It's not his issue. Why are you giving him a hard time? That's difficult. So why isn't it Shane? So the two answers. And again, the second answer is going to take us back to the Shir from Elul. The first answer is from the Sefer Ayasha of Rabbeinu Tam, brought by the Kuntres HaShiurim in Source Yud Aleph. I did not look it up in the original Sefer Ayasha. But he quotes you in a source Yud Aleph regarding this issue of Alanizik Laharchik Etzatzmo, Kasav Al Kol Harchako Shein Takanta Ma'al Yisav, regarding all of the distancing we require in Bava Basra, he says, these are good takanos, good enactments. Shachain Milsa Dishchicha, he says, that neighbors are very common. Aval B'Milsa Delo Shchiach Ein Takanta, but if it's not common, Then they didn't make any takana. You know what I wonder? He had these quotation marks, but the more I read it, I think it's shekein milsa d'shchicha, that it is a milsa d'shchicha, and if it's a milsa and the lav shchicha, then it's not. I wonder, I think that's actually the better way to read it, despite his quotation marks. I have to look in the Sefer Ayasha. But the same, the message is the same. He says, these are takanos d'rabbanan, and they are only meant for common cases. U'b'chardalu d'vorim d'travayu maski yahadadi havi lo shchiyach. Whereas bees and mustard harming each other, he says, is not common. He says the whole thing is a derabanan, and it is uncommon that there would be harm both ways. I think what he means, going back to Stephen's question of Jeffrey's question of whether they had bees and mustard together a lot. I think they did have bees and mustard together a lot. I think his point is that bilateral nezek is uncommon overall, and therefore there was no takana for it. So that's one answer, is that our hachakos are derabanans, and that's one solution. The other solution, I see you, Idan, just let me do the other solution first, is in the Nesivos, and you'll recognize this from Elul. It's a very important principle which we're about to spend more time on. He says, look at the part that I bolded in Yud Beis. Hani dechashu beperek lo yachbar hu baofen dikshi yischayev l'shalim ha'hezek einev sharus lo lasos tash mizebru shuso klal. The ones that are in the Gemara in our perek, those distancing cases, that's where, if we would hold you liable to pay for the damage, it would not be possible for you to use your property. V'yizbatel tash mizemir shuso, you will lose the option of using your property that way. Kevin de yefshir klaba siyo b'shmira, you can't do it. Ubita reshuso chai v'rachmano, the Torah does not require you to lose your property. Meaning, if we're gonna tell you that you can't have your mustard there, you're not gonna be able to have mustard at all. That's what'll end up happening. And we don't want to cause you to be unable to use your property. As opposed to avos nezikin, in Avos Nezikin, you are able to control it. You can keep your animal out of somebody else's yard. But in the mustard case, in the bees case, you're going to tell me I can't have bees? Because the bees are going to damage somebody else's mustard? I'm never going to be able to have bees? That's heartbreaking. I need to be able to have bees on my property. So that's the Nesivos' answer brought for this problem. Idan. Yeah. You won't be able to have doves. What a waste of good mustard. So Idan points out the Gemara in Shabbos that mustard was used as food for doves, and so it's not just the impact on my property if I'm not able to have mustard, but the impact on my property in that now I won't be able to feed the doves. You know, there's a cascading food chain effect here. Interesting point. Thank you. So yes, Michael. Yeah, but how much property do I have? I mean, my house I lived in when I was in Pennsylvania, the fellow who lived there before me, the guy I bought the house from, was a neurosurgeon whose hobby was raising bees. So, you know, because it was Pennsylvania and not Toronto, I had more space than you get, you know, with a house here. But still, like, if you said to him, you can't raise bees near your neighbor's mustard, he couldn't raise bees at all. You know, it's not like putting it at one end of the yard is going to be any better. Bees travel. So yeah, that's what I would see. Daniel. So that's really an interesting question, and that's where I'm going next. So thank you. It's a great question. So basically, the first 40 minutes of this shiur, 38 minutes of this shiur, were primarily useful for people who learned the bee mustard Gemara and want to understand how it works. But now we get into the broader question here of Rabbi Yossi blaming the victim effectively and saying, al hanizak laharchik, that the victim is the one who has to move. Rabbi Yossi has two exceptions. We know one exception is the giri delay argument, right? Rabbi Yossi makes the statement that in the event that the harm is like arrows that you are shooting into the neighbor's property, then you, the mazik, have to distance yourself. If you take a look at source Yud Gimel, the Gemara, Mishnah and Gemara in Chafhei Amud Beis, the Marchigin of Seilim and Abor Esim Chamesh Amma, you have to distance your tree from somebody else's cistern 25 Amos. And if your roots are going into the guy's pit, Imabor Kadma, if the pit was there first, Kotitz Menosin Damim, then he can cut back the tree and pay you for it. There's a whole discussion about why paying, that's not our discussion right now. Vim Ilan Kadam, if the tree was there first, Loyakotz, then don't cut it back. You don't know which? Don't cut it. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Aval Pisha Bor Kodemes Ilan Loyakotz. Rabbi Yossi says, even if the cistern was there first, you do not cut back the tree. Because he planted the tree in his yard, you dug the cistern in your yard, and that's it. On to the next page of the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi says, you each were in your own yard. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halachik Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda says, quoting Shmuel, the law follows Rabbi Yossi. Each one is using his own property. Amar Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi says, Ki Avon Be Rav Kahana, when we learned in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Hava Amrinan Modi Rabbi Yossi Begiri Didei. We said Rabbi Yossi agreed, if it's your arrows in the neighbor's property, that's a different story. We're going to come back to the arrows, I hope, a little bit later. But that's one exception to the rule. Don't make the victim move if it's the arrows of the vandal. Stephen, you're going to say?
No, it's just
okay. Be careful. That looks like a bid. But that's number one. Number two, there's another potential exception for Rabbi Yossi, which intersects with our Gemara, which is where the nezek that's done harms what is called in different places Ikar Yishuv or Takanas Ha'olam. Take a look at the Tosefta. I quoted this in the Shir in Elul. Marchigin Eseilim and Abor Esim Chamesh Amma, distance the tree from the cistern 25 Amos, different kinds of trees, fine. Rabbi Shimon says, K'tishrachi Lamala, we don't need that. The part that I bolded. Rabbi Yossi Matir. Rabbi Yossi says, you can plant the tree in your field. Why? Shalonitnu sados ela linitia. Because fields are made for planting trees. So he argues. Fields are made for planting trees. That's a high standard, Rav Jared. Daniel. In terms of your question about, can I do anything in my yard then and say, well, I need to be able to use my yard? No, but this is what it's made for. Your field is made for planting trees. That's one. Now look at the Yerushalmi in Source Tesvav. Yerushalmi Bava Basra Beis Yud. And I think I brought this also in the opening shir, I'm not sure. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi quotes Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Taimun de Rabbanan mipnei she yishuv ha'olam beboros. You want to know why the Rabbanan say, cut back the tree if the roots are hitting the pit? The answer is, because yishuv ha'olam, the settlement of the world, needs cisterns. Shimon Bar Va quotes Rabbi Yochanan, kach meshev Rabbi Yossi l'chachamim. Rabbi Yossi says, back, kamad de islachon yishuv ha'olam beboros, uf ana isli yishuv ha'olam beilanos. You think cisterns matter? Huh, okay, fine. I think the world needs trees. Don't bother me. The Gemara then goes on with Rabbi Yossi supporting his statement by noting that if we would say roots are the ikar, then you could never bring bikurim, because your roots intertwine with the other person's bikurim, and there's a whole thing. You have to read the Yedid Nefesh there. He has a good explanation of it, but that's a separate point, so I didn't bring it on the sheet. So this is a second exception. What the Yerushalmi calls Ikar Yishuv. Ikar Yishuv is going to win. So Rabbi Yossi happens to disagree with the Rabbanan here because he thinks trees are really important. But if it wasn't talking about a tree, if in some other way that wasn't Ikar Yishuv, I was harming my neighbor's pit, what would Rabbi Yossi say? The Mazik is responsible, right? If my damage to his cistern was not coming about because I was engaged in Yishuv Ha'olam, right? I was doing something else. I don't know what. I was stockpiling comic books and the ink was leaching into the groundwater, which was damaging my neighbor's boar, right? So he would say, that's not Ikar Yishuv Ha'olam. Therefore, I'm the Mazik. I have to move the comic books, right? That would seem to be so. So this is an exception in its own right, based on what we are calling here Yishuv Ha'olam, the settling of the world. Now, the yes.
You
hard in this answer, then what he's saying that, you know, for you, you should always resort for me to increase, but he's saying, you know, like you think it's for you to evolve, I can say the same strength that they contribute. That's why I don't want to play this card, and you can say that. You don't want to play with another type of question.
Does it, I mean, that is effectively what he's saying in the end. But is this your chabur idea from yesterday that I haven't had a chance to hear yet?
This was the chabur for the last week.
Yeah.
So I don't... So Rav Jared, just for the people online, Rav Idan is suggesting that that it's not so much that Rav Yossi is making a factual claim that that this is actually the way, you know, that the, you know, that that it's needed. That the idea is that the way we first explained it, that Yishuv Olam be'ilanos, we need trees, but he's just saying Yishuv Olam can't be dictated by you saying cisterns are Yishuv HaOlam, right? That's what you're trying to say? So I don't know. It doesn't sound like it to me, especially given his language in the Tosefta, Lo Nitnu Sados El Anatia, right, which is Ilanos. You know? I feel like that's a hard read.
I mean, if in generalization of Yishuv HaOlam, the only sugya, the main primary sugya is the sugya that Hagar says.
So
Yishuv HaOlam is particularly the person of
Right, so I'm going to show this is not that Yishuv HaOlam. Yeah, I don't agree that that's the same as in Sanhedrin. But we'll talk about this. I hope. So the limit on both exceptions is, of course, if you act in the other guy's property, right? That we understand. Meaning, if you act in the other guy's property, then all bets are off. Then of course you're liable. It's not really a limit to the exceptions. I guess it's a third, you know, form of it, if you like. I'm not sure why I wrote in my notes that it was the limit. It's a third exception. If you act in the other guy's property, and in fact, the Yad Ramah says that's what's going on with Giri Delay. I brought you the Yad Ramah in source to Zion on the sheet, that when we say Giri Delay means it's on the mazik to stop, the command of Avin Maisa Bershusa de Chavre Dami, it's like you're acting in the other guy's property. So that's, I guess, a third exception would be the way to frame that. But let's understand what it means when he says, Yishuv Shel Olam, Iker Yishuv. Tell me what you think that means. When Rabbi Yossi makes the statement that that you're not allowed, that the Mazik is going to have to stop if he is harming Yishuv Shel Olam, or just the opposite, the Mazik is justified if his pursuit is Yishuv Shel Olam, right? Because that's what he's saying here. My trees are Yishuv Shel Olam. What does that mean? Why does Yishuv Shel Olam matter? Why does that justify the mazik? Yeah.
You develop the purpose of your action. So why are you doing this? You're like, I have a good reason. That's why I'm doing this. Don't get like.
I have a good reason to destroy your property. Oh well, that's okay then.
No, meaning that I have like a. It's not like I'm doing it for you, for like, you know, I'm like, you know, being a vandal. It's like I'm doing something as part of my what I need to do. And then it's got a clear goal that's productive, that most would agree with, that I have a right to be doing, and now you're, and like...
But oh, I could do the same thing right outside his house. I don't have to do that in my yard. And I could just say, well, it's a justified thing that I'm doing. Yeah. That if it's done for Yeshuva Shal Olam, it's not called Nezek anymore. Like Rosh Lama Zalman on Lifnei Iver. Right? Rosh Lama Zalman says, if you give food to somebody who is not going to make a bracha, but you do it because you don't want him to hate Jews, then it's not called Lifnei Iver, because what it's called is helping him to observe Lo Sisna Asachicha Bil Vavecha. So it's not called Nezek. What you're doing is Yeshuva Shel Olam. Shimshon is not committing suicide. Shimshon is killing Plishtim. Right? That's a good way to look at it. I hadn't thought about looking at it that way, but you're looking at the sum of the act, instead of looking at it in terms of that. The only problem I have is the same thing I just said to Rochayim, which is then why limit it to your to when you're acting in your property? I could do the same thing right outside his property and claim it's Yishuv Shel Olam. Jeffrey, and then Stephen.
Would Yishuv Shel Olam vote sort of be like back in the day when all we had was coal and people needed coal and it caused air pollution, but you needed it for fuel and da-da-da-da manufacturing.
So that's the argument, like what Michael is saying, that because it has this positive aspect to it, Jeffrey gives the example of mining coal, you know, which creates fumes and harms people, and on the other hand, we needed fuel. So could you, you know, could you argue that the act is not an act of nezek, effectively? But again, I say then you could do it outside the nezek's property, not in your yard, on that basis. Reverend Stephen. Osek b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah. Yeah, the same argument will apply, right? I'm doing yeshiva shalom, I'm right outside your property. Enjoy! Right, so I have three different approaches. And it's gonna, yeah, we'll see how much we get done and whether I just record the rest or not we'll discuss. But the first approach is that not being able to use your property constitutes a great loss. This is not the same thing as you own this property, therefore you can do it. But it would cause you a great loss if you could not use your property in this way. Going back to the question from Daniel, right? It's not anything on my property, but that which would cause me great harm if it were limited. That fits the language of the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi. It's a little weak in the Yerushalmi's language, because then it's not Yishuv Ha'olam, it's Yishuv for me. So it's a little bit odd, but it certainly fits with a lot of Rishonim. I brought you the example, we already saw this in Rav Yehuda's shir last week, from Dira Sha'ani. If you look at Rashi in Source Yud Zayin, where they say that you're allowed to do certain things in your property, specifically where you live, because of the harm that would be caused to you if you couldn't. He says, "Ve'ein lanu les or diraso alav," unless it's certain kinds of hezek. We're not going to prohibit you from doing it. Why? You know, it would be too big a loss for you if you wouldn't be able to use your property in that way. It also fits Tosfos on Yudches Amud Beis, especially, where Tosfos talks about why we say specifically that with a tree, if you put the tree beside the cistern permissibly, you're allowed to keep it there. We wouldn't do that for other types of harm. He says, why? Bolded line in Yudches. Hani mili ilan, shasui lamot shanim rabos. Because a tree is meant to be there for many, many years. Ve'ika hefsin meruba, there's great loss. The idea is, great loss matters. We're not going to cause you great loss by limiting your use of your property. It also fits the Rush, who brought that, in the case that I brought you in Elul, when we talked about the overflowing cistern in Reuven's yard, harming Shimon in the next yard. So there, from Shimon's side, we said, the nafish hezeka de Shimon. There is a lot of harm. I care about magnitude. That's one way to look at it. Yes, AZ. Correct. What we're now doing is looking at both sides and saying who's getting hurt more effectively. And you're really harming me by not letting me do this. That's correct. Correct. It goes back, right. Right. It goes back to something we talked about before you walked in, but in terms of the honey and the mustard, whether there's any issue of bilateral damage, and how do I look at that, and do I weigh one's harm against the other, or do I say, no, you're both causing harm? This is all part of the same thing. It also fits with a Rush in Bava Kamma. So we are allowed to go over into Bava Kamma. There's a discussion there. I'll say it outside. It's already 11:24. But there's a discussion there about why the Rif says that one is patur for Shein Veregel in Rishus Harabim. My animal is walking. It eats somebody else's property while it's walking in the middle of the road. Why am I patur for having eaten his property? Urchehu. He said, the Rif says, because that's what your animal always does when it's in the road. It eats the things that are in the road. Why is that a problem? So the Rush says, I don't understand. I'm saying it outside, but you can see the Rush in Source Chaf. He says, the reason why you're putter in Rosh Hashanah is a pasuk. Uvi'er b'sdei acher. You're only liable if your animal eats in somebody else's property. You don't need to give me a logic of Urchei. So the Rush answers that the Rif is explaining the pasuk's logic. Why does the pasuk exempt me for what happens in the road? Because Urchehu, because that's normal. And the Rush gives a nafgamina for it. He says the difference would be if there's a stick extending from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYachid, and my animal steps on it in the Rishus HaRabim and causes harm in the Rishus HaYachid. According to the pasuk, you're chayev. Ubiyer b'stei acher. I did damage in the stei acher. However, according to Urchehu, it did what it normally does. It walks in the road and it steps on things. So therefore, I'm not chayev. That's the difference between the two. But the point here is using this whole concept of Urchehu as a principle, this is your way, and we're not going to cause you a loss by not letting you go through there. That's one idea. A second idea, and I'm just going to say the rest of this outside, and I'll record the rest of it with the sources, I think. This way we get a complete shear. The second idea is that it's about the right of use of your property as a rule in Shechinim. And this is what we had said in Elulzman when I first introduced the concept. I have a right to use my property in ways that are normal. And with that was the Rush with the cistern causing harm to the other guy. It's also the Ritzbah, Brodanagos Mamanios. Seems to say this as well. It fits with the Kiryat Sefer and a Choshchenim, all of which I hope to discuss in the recording. But the second approach is, why is it that Rabbi Yossi says that the Mazik has to move in the event that there's a Yeshuvo Shel Olam concern on the other side? The answer is because Yeshuvo Shel Olam is what you are expected to do in your property. That's what Yeshuvo Shel Olam means. First approach is Yeshuvo Shel Olam is about magnitude. Second is that it's about what you're expected to do in your property. And then the third, last idea is it's actually not either of the first 2 points. This fits well with the Rishalmi, not as well with the Tosefta. And that is actually about the greater world. It's not about the Mazik. It's not about the Nizak. It's about the needs of the world. Like that phrase, Yeshuvo Shel Olam. Not like the Tosefta's language so much of fields are made for planting, but like the language of saying the world needs us to have boros. The world needs us to have tabilonos. It's an environmental concern. And it fits well with the Ritva in Bava Basra Chaf Hei Amud Beis, where he actually says the Yerushalmi is in disagreement with the Bavli. In the Bavli, the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi in the Rabbanan is an Ezekin Machlokas. It's a Machlokas about damaging somebody else's property. And there's Mammon, and that's the way it's presented in the Bavli. In the Yerushalmi, when they invoke Yeshuvo Shel Olam, the debate is about Isser. The debate is, am I allowed halachically to harm his property? Because I'm harming Yeshuvo Shel Olam by doing so. So it's a completely different way to look at the sugya. The Kuntres Shiurim sort of floats this, but within the greater harm approach. But I think you really have, to sum it up, and I realize I raced through, you know, something that should have taken 20 minutes. But what I'm trying to get at here is this. Rabbi Yossi paskins, and we follow Rabbi Yossi, that the victim is the one who has to move. It's really on the victim to move. However, in the event that there's a great need for me to be able to do this in my property, which we frame as Yeshuva Shel Olam, Takanas HaOlam, Lo Nivru El Natiya, whatever phrase we want to put on that, then that's going to hold sway, whether for the Mazik or for the Nizak. If it's the Nizak who needs to be able to do this on his property, the Mazik is going to have to budge. If the Mazik needs to do this on his property, the Nizak is going to have to budge. And then we deal with the bilateral Nezek on its own. But that's that can play out either as sadly, because our Gemara and the Tosefta, the Yerushalmi, is teaching me we care about causing great harm. It's great harm if you say you can't do this. Or because you have a right, by definition, in your property to be able to do this. The difference in those two primarily is that the first approach applies whether it's Nezek or Shechinim. It doesn't matter. The second approach is really Shechinim specific. And then the third approach, which I think is also just for Shechinim really logically, is Yeshuva Shel Olam, what the world needs. And that would be a value that we would also apply. So I hope to record the sources on this and make it a little more clear, append it to the recording of this shiur, and then upload the whole thing as one unit, and that way people who are interested will be able to hear that as well. Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos. Rav Jared, do you want to mention what you're talking about next week? Do you know yet?
We'll probably be following off of more of this Yeshiva Shel Olam. I don't know completely, but in the auction of this day.
Okay, so we're going to hear more about Yeshiva Shel Olam next week with Rav Jared. Jeffrey, what were you going to say?
Shabbos.
Oh. Okay, I say that too. Have a good Shabbos, good Chodesh. Okay, this is the addendum to Shir from today, just explaining the last point. We were talking about when Rabbi Yossi says that Al HaNizak, that it's the victim's responsibility to distance himself, as opposed to when he believes that it's Al HaMazik L'Harchik, that it is the vandal who has to distance himself. The default is that Rabbi Yossi believes that the Nizak, the victim, is the one who has to distance himself, even though he is the victim. That's the normal situation. However, we said in the case of Giri Delay, where the vandal's action is, we'll call it direct, there's more to be said, but let's call it direct, then the vandal has to desist. And we also said that where what the victim is doing is what the land is for, then the vandal has to desist, as opposed to where the vandal is doing what the land is for, in which case it's the victim's problem. So what exactly did that mean, what the land is for? What's that about? So our first explanation was that not being able to use your property constitutes a great loss. It's about the magnitude of loss. It's not really a law in Shechinim in terms of neighbors. It's a law in Nezek as a whole. We don't make you do things that would involve a great loss to you in order to prevent harm for somebody else. And I noted during the shiur that this might be something you could read into Rashi's view of Dira Sha'ani, which is in Source Yud Zayin on the sheet. But I also noted that it could be seen, or noted on the sheet at any rate, that it could be seen in Tosvos on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. Tosvos there is talking about the case in which the roots of the tree are growing into a bore. They're growing into the cistern. I think we did actually mention this in Shir, but just in case, if you take a look at the Tosvos in Source Yud Ches, he says that trees are different from other mazikin. And the reason why a tree is different from other mazikin is because, as I bolded, hanimili ilan sha'asui lamod shanim rabos, trees are meant to stand for a long time. Vika hefsim aruba, there will be a great loss in losing the tree. So that's why we say that the tree can be there, because it will be a great loss to the owner. Where did Tosfos get the idea that a great loss matters? So I think the language of the Tosefta, that the field is meant for planting, supports this idea. It also fits the fact that the Rosh in the Tshuva, the much discussed Tshuva regarding Reuven, who has an overflowing boar, and is now harming Shimon, is responsible for the fact that his boar is harming Shimon. And one of the points that the Rosh makes in Source Yates, as I bolded, is Hachamoda Kaven de Nafish Hazeka de Shimon, that even though Rabbi Yossi normally believes it's the victim's problem, here he will say not necessarily, because there is great harm to Shimon. Why does great harm matter? Because again, it's like that Tosefta. His property is meant to be used in a certain way, and we're not supposed to cause him great harm by depriving him of his use of that property. Finally, Source Chaf, the Rush in Bava Kama. There's a discussion about Shein Veregel in Rishos HaRab in Bava Kama. Shein, my animal, is wandering through the public domain, and it chews on somebody else's stuff that's sitting there on the street. Not my problem. I am exempt from liability. It tramples something in the course of normal walking. Also, I am not responsible for it. That's basic. So if you look at the comment of the Rush commenting on the riff there, he asks, Well, take a look. Kasav Rav Alphas, Vishain Varega Pturim Bishus Harabim De Urchehu. The Rif says that the reason why you are exempt from liability if your animal eats in the public domain is because it's the normal way of the animal to do so. So the Rosh says, Tamiyale, I am shocked. What do you mean, because it's the normal way of animals to do so? Why did you need to give that answer? Continuing the end of the first line in the Rosh, HaKrak Sid, V'vi'er B'stei Acher, V'darshinim V'lo B'rishus HaRabim. The reason why he's exempt from liability is because the Torah says you're liable for your animal eating other people's property, B'stei Acher, if it's in somebody else's property. V'darshinim V'lo B'rishus HaRabim, not if it's in the road. So it's a pasuk. It's not because this is the normal way of animals to eat. It's because the Torah told you, you're not liable. So his answer is, V'abshur Shabbala Farish Tama Pasuk. The answer is that the Rif is trying to explain why the Torah exempts the person. The reason why he's exempt is because the Pasuk said so. But why did the Torah exempt you? Taimu Dekra. Why does the Pasuk exempt you from liability? Because it's normal for the animal to walk in the road. And the E.F. Shar, Shielchu Habayla Macharei and Tamid. It's not possible for the owner to trail after the animal all the time. So that's the rationale why. What's the difference whether I have this rationale or don't have this rationale? So the Rush explains, V'nafkamina mitam zeh, shem haya eitz aroch, munach miktsasi b'rishus harab, miktsasi b'rishus hayachid. If there were a long stick, partly in the public domain and partly in a private domain, and the animal walks on it in the public domain and it breaks something in the private domain, so that's the normal place for it to go. And therefore, it's exempt from liability if I make that argument. As opposed to if you took the pasuk straight, it was bier b'stei acher. It did cause the harm in the private domain. Without the Rif's explanation, I would have said that you are liable. With the Rif's explanation, you are suddenly exempt from liability. But my point in bringing this, and it's not me, I think I saw this in the Kuntres Shiurim, in Bava Basra Tess, Seif Tess, is that the idea here is that the reason why Orche is a concept at all, the reason why I care about it being normal, is because it's a great loss if you're going to tell me that I can't have my animal walk in the road. That's the idea. That's one way to look at it. Now, I'm not 100% sure that the Kuntres Shiurim actually agrees in this explanation of Nafesh Hezekah, of great harm. He does bring the idea. I'm not clear that he would say that it applies for all of Nezek. In Kuntres Shiurim, Bava Basra Tess, Sif Zayin, I think he says it's just Shechinim. So that expansion may not be his. But that's one way to look at it. Rabbi Yossi says, you are not responsible to back off in the event that backing off would cause you a great loss. Okay. Second way is the way we explained it in Elulzman in my Shir Klali then, which is that it's simply about the right of use of your property, and this is perhaps a rule just in the laws of Shechinim, just in terms of being a neighbor. The idea that the laws of being a neighbor are about being for the good of the world. The Rush quoted the concept of Derecheha Darchei Noam, which I brought you here in Source Chaf Aleph in bold. This is what one is supposed to do. That's all. Maybe it's social contract, as we discussed. We talked about the Chazon Ish, Mishnas Rabbi Aharon. It seems like this is the view of the Ritzbah, quoted in the Hagos Mamonios. I brought it here in Source Chaf Beis. Od Amar Ritzbah. He says Rabbi Yossi doesn't always say that the victim is the one who has to distance himself. He says the victim is the one who has to distance if what the vandal is doing is the essence of use of that property, living there, using that property. And he says that's like the Tosefta when Rabbi Yossi says that fields are made for planting, and he believes that's in the Yerushalmi also, that the world needs cisterns or the world needs trees. The point is, this is the basic use of the property. Don't make me stop using the property. If it's the Mazik who is making use of the property in the normal way, then the Nizak has to back off. If it's the Nizak, then it's the Mazik who has to back off. That's the position of the Ritzba. I have to be honest, I think it's hard to read that into the Yerushalmi, because if you look back in the Yerushalmi, the language in source Tesvav was Yishuv Ha'olam, the settlement of the world. It isn't about your use of the property or normal use of the property. I guess the Ritzba reads that as Yeshua Shal Olam, meaning the owner's development, not the world's development. Okay. As the Kuntres Shirim notes in Bava Basra Tess if Tess, within this read of the Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi's point regarding Yeshuvo Shel Olam is explaining the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan in the Bavli. In other words, it's an agreement with the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan that's discussed in the Mishnah and then the Gemara in the Bavli on Chaf Hei Amud Beis, discussing what happens when it's not Girei Delei. They're all on the same page. And so you can harmonize it and say, this is all part of one big discussion about the right of use of your property. It fits very nicely, if you say it's just a Shechenim rule, it fits with the fact that when it comes to Nezikin, we don't seem to care about you using your property. It's only in Shechenim that we care about you using your property. How do we know that? Source Chav Gimel, the Gemara in Bava Kama. There were goats that were eating into Rabbi Yosef's property. Rabbi Yosef says to his Talmud, Abaye, go tell the owners of these goats to get rid of them. Put your goats away, pal. Amar Lei, to which Abaye says, Amai Ezel, why should I go to them? Dia Zilna, Amrili Ligdor Margadira Ba'are. They'll say, hey, you know what? Build a fence around your property. Why are you bothering us? So that is a very interesting exchange in its own right. Tosfos quotes the Rif regarding this. Take a look at Source Chav Dalet. Tosfos writes, Yachli Memer Aligdor Mar Gedira Ba'are. Hayanishmat Abaye Shal Haya Chafetz Le'elech L'Sham. He says, Abaye just doesn't want to go. It's not that this argument actually makes sense. When Abaye says they could say fence in your property, no, they really can't. The Tanan, because the Mishnah says, Achla mitochachanus mishalemes. If somebody's animal goes and eats in somebody else's store, he has to pay. The owner of the animal has to pay. We don't say, well, the owner of the store should have locked his store. It's just not true. And he quotes you the Rif, for of Alphas Pasak Rabbi Yosef, the Rif Paskin like Rabbi Yosef, that in fact these people are responsible for their animals invading, and Abaye was just, he didn't want to go. That's the read in the Gemara in Bava Kama as explained by Tosfos. So even though they are the Mazikin, they are still supposed to be Marchik. They are still supposed to distance themselves. We don't say Al Hanizak Larchik. So that would seem to demonstrate that this is a rule. The rule of Al Hanizak Larchik is a Shechenim specific rule about the right of use of your property. However, worth noting, the Nesivos HaMishpat in Kuf Nun Hei Yud Ches thinks that this principle of use of your property and what's considered normal use does apply to Nezek as a whole. He says we only invoke the principle of Ushmiras and Alecha, that there's liability, you know, you have to, for your animal, if you know, you're responsible to guard it, where you can control it. In the Bava Kama cases, you are able to control it and therefore they're responsible. But he thinks that the principle that we're talking about, the principle that I get to use my property in the way that it's meant for, is applies to Nezek as a whole. Okay. This idea that the right of use of your property holds sway also fits the comment of a Kiryas Sefer in Source Chaf Hey. In Source Chaf Hey, the Kiryas Sefer says, Dine ha-harchakos nira dahavu midirabanan. He says the laws of harchakos are actually rabbinic, not biblical. The whole distancing from somebody else's property. Diminat Torah and hizik chayev l'shalim. Biblically, you do have to pay if you cause harm. Ela shachacham tiknu harchaka kadesh lo yavo l'chaveru hezek machmaso. The chacham added, hey, distance yourself as well. And he says, so too the harchakos in perak asiri, perak yid aleph, call, he's in the Rambam in Hilchos Shechenim. Kol shebahezek lechaveru mitzad mashu osev ishas asiya. So anytime that your actions cause harm when you are doing it, havi kamazik bechitzav merishusa. It's like you're damaging it with arrows from your property. V'chayv l'shalim in haTorah, and you have to pay biblically. So writes the Kiryas Sefer. The harchakos that we're talking about here are derabanan. And as brought in the Kuntres Shiurim, the Sefer Hayashar of Rabbeinu Tam uses that language, that it's derabanan, I think I brought that earlier on the sheet. I'm just looking for it. But I believe that's the problem with doing this days after giving the shir. But I believe that I brought you the Sefer HaYashar from the version that appeared in the Kuntrasei Shiurim earlier on. But I don't see it right now. Okay, it may be. Those who are listening to the shir straight will have a better idea than I do about whether this is actually on the source sheet. But this is, yeah, I don't see it. But it's supposed to be also feeding into this idea that it's a derabanan. These harchakos are derabanan, and it would make sense fitting in with the idea of the right of use of your property being somewhat malleable in the way that a derabanan would be. So that's the second possibility. First possibility is the reason why the normal use of the property holds sway is because it's a great loss if you don't have the option of normal use of the property. Second reason is because this is a rule in Shechinim, I think just in Shechinim, although again, could be argued that the Nesivos HaMishpat says that it's beyond that, to Nezek. You have the right of use of your property in the normal way. Third possibility is to say the Yerushalmi, not really the Tosefta, but the Yerushalmi, is saying that Yishuv HaOlam, the benefit of the world as a whole, is a factor and determines who is responsible to distance or stop doing what they're doing. The Yerushalmi said, I get to have my trees there because, Rav Zerbi Yossi says, trees are really important. So the Ritva actually reads the Yerushalmi to be not agreeing with the Bavli, and that opens up this possibility. If you take a look at Source Chavav, Mishnah says, Marchiken es ha'ilan, you distance the tree, lefum gemara dilan, as far as the Bavli is concerned, benezikin pligi, they're debating regarding Nezek, dehochasak Rabbi Yossi, the law follows Rabbi Yossi. Umiu bi Yerushalmi, but in the Yerushalmi, Pirej de Rabbanan Savri Sheroi Laharachik Nisha Takanas Ha'olam Beboros Yosemi Beilanos. Rabbi Yossi Savra Shetikon Olam Beilos Kamola Boros. He says the idea in the Yerushalmi is that the Rabbanan believe that the cisterns are more important than the trees, and Rabbi Yossi says no, trees are as important as cisterns are. He's not saying more according to this Ritva, but they're on equal level. They're on equal footing. The Umasha Amu Bigamara de Echad Ilan Asamuch the Echad Ilan Anota Mutter Shamanaski and Hinchil Yeshua as the Haaretz. And when the Gemara is going to say that the regarding trees that are at the property line, trees that hang over the property line, that Yeshua allowed this to go on when Yeshua gave the Jews their portions, it was with the understanding that this could happen. Kvar Pirshu Birushalmi Shlo Hisnu El Inyan Yanikov Lola Hevi Gezel Mishum Bikurim. He says, the Yerushalmi explains that that's true in terms of allowing the animal to be nourished by somebody else's property. It's not called theft. And the Bikurim can still be brought even though the roots go into somebody else's property. Aval hechadik and nezek lachaver, but where you cause harm to somebody else, mishum bor, o avodas hakrabim, ukiyotze bazeh, you're keeping them from working their vineyards or you're damaging their pit, lo isne bazeh klal. That was never part of Yehoshua's enactment. And that's why they have a debate. That's what they're actually debating. So the Yerushalmi is saying, the Machlokas is not about Nezikin and Mamon. The Machlokas is about Takanas Ha'olam. That's really what this is all, about. The Yerushalmi is saying it's about Takanas Ha'olam, Yishuv Ha'olam. Now, of course, when you have Yerushalmi versus Bavli, we're gonna follow the Bavli. That's the idea. The Kuntrasei Shiurim takes up this idea in Tess, taking it as an iteration of the Nafesh Hezekah idea, the idea that the harm is great. But I think I'm going to stop there because I'm not sure if recording things 3 days later is actually working really well. I hope that this is somewhat clear for people who take the time to listen.